The news reports about the cases of the hantavirus that so far occurred have painted what some call a concerning picture. Cases happen where a lot of people were together in limited space, like a cruise ship. People diagnosed with the hantavirus were placed in isolation. This has caused some to say, oh no, here we go again. Are we actually watching the birth of a new pandemic, or is what's happened so far revealing that preparation policies regarding basic health issues, even like the hantavirus, need to be better followed? The next guest joins us to discuss all this. He's the former chief medical officer for New York City's COVID-19 response, who's now CEO of Wellness Equity Alliance, Dr. Tyler Evans. How are you today, doctor?
I'm well. Good to be with you.
Thank you for coming back here. WellnessEquityAlliance.com. Learn more about the doctor's organization. Just for basics and the foundation, doctor, what are the specifics, what are the elements of the hantavirus?
So hantavirus is a pathogen that's typically spread through rodent excrements, and we'll see sort of episodic outbreaks taking place in throughout the Americas. In the United States, it's usually in the western U.S. There's been a few outbreaks in California, particularly around Yosemite, again, given the sort of wild rodents that are around there. Typically, what it in terms of what it causes, it'll cause a mild symptoms. You'll get your sort of viral prodrome or sort of upper respiratory infection-like symptoms. But again, they're typically sort of mild. Very, very rarely will it spread or will it sort of advance into what's called the hemorrhagic fever with renal involvement or kidney involvement, or the pulmonary syndrome, hantavirus pulmonary syndrome. So that's either kidneys or lungs. But again, that's sort of very, very rare. This particular situation that had taken place with the passengers was quite different, but I could pause there if there's any more questions.
So it's just a matter of the ship that these people were on just wasn't clean, sanitary. That was the main catalyst, that they didn't see a rat problem, didn't get an exterminator in. Is it really as simple as that?
No, what we think was happening here was the a few of them were infected prior to boarding. There was a bird watching tour. They were down in South America, and they embarked around Ushuaia. Ushuaia is at the tip of South America and Patagonia. I actually honeymooned there. And so in that particular area, there's the specific strain called the Andes virus, which is one of the only known strains that can actually cause the person-to-person transmission. So what we believe happened was they were on this sort of bird-watching tour. They could have been infected through some sort of some rodents that were around the birds, and then ultimately boarded the ship. Whether or not they were symptomatic at the time is not clear, but the reality is, and I'll just kind of jump into this, the reality is, cruise ships are one of the most formidable public health challenges that we experience. When you think about cruise ships, they're pretty much just sort of floating petri dishes, and specifically floating congregate facilities, which makes it even more challenging. So you've got when it came to the Hondias, you've got only 150 folks, but typically on the Princess or the Carnival fleets, you've got thousands, upwards of 6,000-7,000 people, and they're all in very sort of close quarters. And so, when you have any infection taking place, norovirus is very, very common in these places. It's very easy to transmit that. Once in a while, you'll get some upper respiratory infection, flu-like, or specifically flu. Outbreaks taking place in these petri dishes as well. The reality is there's no screening modalities at all. And in terms of response, it's very at best you'll have a doctor on board. The sort of qualifications of those doctors are not really sort of standardized. And in terms of sort of the diagnostics and the treatment sort of modalities that they have are going to be very limited too.
Well, sure. I mean, when you think about it too, yeah. I mean, there's one doctor on a ship, the doctor-patient right. ratio, not saying that every patient, every person, every passenger is going to get sick, but the doctor-person ratio, quite steep odds for any medical professional, exactly. no matter what their experience is.
Exactly. And then, you know, it's very hit or miss in terms of sort of what the connection to that doc or that medical provider will have to some sort of other group. You know, one doctor alone, to your point, for thousands of people is, you know, it's not really that sort of effective. Can that person sort of radio in if that person has questions, et cetera? This is infectious disease. Not many doctors are actually trained well in infectious diseases. So there's a lot of pieces here that we could sort of, I think it's an opportunity to really shore up some better best practice here. I don't think my recommendation would be to sort of force requirements, but I think they would be, my sort of recommendation would be to impose, you know, recommendations for folks coming in. If passengers are going into, you know, certain areas, they should be well aware of, you know, any sort of emerging or existing sort of challenges, prevalence of certain diseases. You also have to think too that a lot of passengers are older adults. I don't know what the mean age of cruise ships are. It's an interesting question, but I would suspect it's probably in the 50s. You know, typically you'll see cruise ships, particularly in places like Alaska, where you'll have 65 and older is very common. And so, you know, the older that we get, the higher our risk of illness. And so we have a lot of folks coming in with comorbidities. It's just basically doctor talk for a lot of different sicknesses or illnesses. And that's going to cause sort of waning immunity as well. So when that takes place, then your risk of infection and your risk of sort of, you know, further advancement of disease is going to be much greater. So we really have to take care of our older adults. So I, you know, strongly recommend the cruise ship industry to start sort of changing their methods there. Last thing I'll say too is when you think about cruise ships, they are going through ports of entry around the world. So it's just a kaleidoscope of microbes that could potentially sort of enter these vessels. And a big part is the crew. I was the only infectious disease specialist at the time that was helping to demobilize and sort of screen and isolate and quarantine the Grand Princess in early 2020, which was docked in Oakland. And I like to theatrically refer to it as the last cruise ship on Earth. And about a third of them were crew and South Asians, particularly Indians, Pakistanis, Filipinos. And so we had to transport a lot of them to UCSF. They were unaware of the sort of the American, you know, medical system. There were a lot of challenges there. They you know, mostly had not had any sort of screening practices as well. So there's a lot more that I think we can shore up. I'll pause there.
Well, just to wrap it up, too, I mean, the idea you have of having stronger health requirements and healthcare requirements on ships is an obvious path that needs to be taken. But given that there's literally a jigsaw puzzle of the ships and what nations they're flagged on, how would you have some sort of uniformity in all that?
Yeah, I mean, so there needs to be better coordination between these different the different countries that they are sort of touching and sort of the sort of, you know, the origin of the vessel, whether that's American or whatnot. You know, there are centers for disease control across the world. There's the European CDC, of course. There's our CDC. The Chinese has their own, and then of course you have the WHO. So if we really shored up better practice in terms of coordination, we could ultimately sort of create our own sort of, you know, cruise ship surveillance system where, again, there's ongoing sort of coordination discussions of sort of what's happening. And just better preparedness. We refer to it as public health emergency preparedness. It's pretty tenuous throughout the world. WHO kind of looks at it at a very sort of macro level. It's not very tight in terms of operations. It's very sort of, you know, 30,000 foot view or some other sort of ship metaphor. And then CDC, given a lot of the challenges that have taken place with the CDC and the lack of leadership now, we're experiencing quite a bit of stressors there. So we've got a lot of problems when it comes to public health, but we're really hoping that, you know, opportunities like this, that we can sort of improve our systems in place.
Yeah, definitely respond to the wake-up call as opposed to react to it. If in the aftermath, he's the former chief medical officer for New York City's COVID-19 response, now CEO of Wellness Equity Alliance. Learn more about the work that they do at wellnessequityalliance.com. Dr. Tyler Evans, thanks for the insight and the direction of what better things could be done to keep anything like this from not just spreading, but from happening in the first place. Thanks for being here today.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.